So in the last episode of Keeping It Real, we talked about the life of Brother Malcolm X, aka Shaheed Malcolm X, and we left at a very cool cliffhanger. So in this episode, we're going to finish up the episodes regarding Malcolm X, talking about the making of Shaheed Malcolm X. So as we talked about in the last episode of Keeping It Real, we were talking about how Brother Malcolm X was becoming increasingly popular and he was becoming increasingly effective, not only in the African-American community in the United States of America, but also in the Muslim community of the United States of America, and he was becoming increasingly popular and effective in Africa and the Muslim world in general. And we had said that that definitely gets you killed by the Federales. So as we had said in the last episode, of course, Brother Malcolm X had returned from the Hajj, and so he had became El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz. You should definitely watch the previous episode to get a lot of the information that was in the previous episode, such as background information and the like. So because Brother El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz went on the Hajj, and he also had a whole bunch of international travels, so what that had done was that it made him look at the world in a global perspective. So his horizons had widened. You know, it wasn't just the civil rights movement inside the United States of America. So when he came back from this travels and the Hajj, and he saw that all these different people have equal rights in Islam, so when he came back, he decided to move his movement from being a simple civil rights movement in the United States of America to a global human rights movement, where all of the people of the world can be a part of this movement, in order to strengthen and empower the peoples of the world from the arrogant powers trying to colonialize and subjugate and dominate and steal their wealth.
FBI, open up!
And so along these lines, Brother Malcolm X, he really emphasized the direct connection between the civil rights fight and movement of the African Americans in the United States of America with the global human rights movement, especially centered around third world nations. So in essence, he was creating a global movement. And yes, when you start to create a global movement, which Brother Malcolm X had done, was creating a global movement against the arrogant powers of the world, that will get you killed by the Federales. So now, as of course we are moving towards the end of the episode, even though it's the beginning of the episode, towards the end of this episode, there's something really interesting, and that is that throughout the life of Brother Malcolm X, the Federal Bureau of Investigations of the United States of America followed his case, very closely through the 1950s and the 1960s. So the Federal Bureau of Investigations is AKA the FBI in the US of A, and yes, they are the Federales. So later on in the 1970s, of course, after the martyrdom of Brother Shaheed Malcolm X, the American public found out about different programs, such as program COINTELPRO. He's going to bring the text on the screen. COINTELPRO. And this was a governmental surveillance and infiltration program made by the FBI, probably with the help of the CIA as well, in order to infiltrate the different civil rights movements of the United States of America. Well, that's what's interesting. So why would the, federal government of the United States of America want to infiltrate and disrupt civil rights movements? Well, it's because, unfortunately, in the imperialist, colonialist, arrogant power system of the United States of America, you have to have a lower class people, which is usually known as the 99%. Now, if the 99% start saying, we want our God-given rights to freedom and our God-given rights to liberty, and, we want to be equal to the white man and these kind of things, that starts to disrupt the status quo, and it's like we need to quell this stuff and they need to stop talking about these things, and it's like somebody please tell them to go back and sit in the back of the bus. What? And now this infiltration was so serious that it says, repeat. And now this infiltration by the FBI in program COINTELPRO was so serious that they say that some of the members of the Nation of Islam were actually FBI undercover agents or informers or rats, as you know we call them on the street. And so Louis Lomax writes that John Ali was the national secretary of the Nation of Islam. Guess what? He happened to be an FBI agent. The national secretary of the Nation of Islam happened to be an FBI agent. Shame on you, John Ali. Disgusting. And so Shahadat, aka martyrdom for the sake of Allah, on the path of Allah, was knocking on Brother Malcolm's door, and he embraced it with loving arms openly. On February 21st, 1965, while he was addressing a 400 people, group of people, of the OAAU organization in New York City, in the city of Manhattan, in the Auburn Ballroom, as he was preparing to give his message to the people, somebody in the crowd yelled out, and I quote, "Nigger, get your hand out of my pocket," end quote. And so when this disturbance occurred, of course, El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz and his bodyguards, ran to quell the situation and just tell everybody, listen, just chill out, take it easy. We're here to listen to a speech, and we're talking about civil rights and human rights and Islam and the promotion, you know, and the empowerment and the strengthening of the African American community in the United States. Just everybody just relax, you know, chill out. And then eventually at that point, Brother Malcolm X was martyred. And it was at this time that one individual rushed forwards and he shot Brother Malcolm with a sawed-off shotgun. And two other assailants ran towards him with semi-automatic handguns and started to fire. Now, a sawed-off shotgun, if most of you guys are probably not aware of what that does, you have a barrel of a shotgun, which he might show you on the screen, so you saw it off to make it smaller. So when that, it spreads the buckshots in a much, I don't know how to show it to you guys, in a much wider range. It spreads much more and it is much more deadlier. I don't understand these people. Even if you didn't, saw off the shotgun, you would have still killed the brother, man, you know? According to reports, Brother Malcolm X was pronounced dead at 3:30 p.m. and we pronounced him a martyr at 3:30 p.m. Just as a FYI, you know, a lot of the people out there, which includes the Muslim people and the non-Muslim people, the African-American people and the non-African-American people, and like I said, all the people in general must be wondering, why are you calling him a shaheed? Well, actually, it was Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei who, a while back, maybe 2 or 3 years ago or something like that, he himself called Brother Malcolm X Shaheed Malcolm X. And so we too call Brother Malcolm Shaheed Malcolm X. So apparently the autopsy, according to our reports here, the autopsy identified 21 gunshot wounds to the chest, the left shoulder, the arms and the legs, including 10 buckshot wounds from the initial shotgun blast. So they came for the brother to make sure that he would die. They did not want him to live. And thus, Malcolm Little, aka Detroit Red, aka Malcolm X, aka Malik El-Shabazz, aka El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz, became Shaheed Malcolm X. Now, at the end of this episode, we have one last excerpt from the speech of Shaheed Malcolm X, which he gave in October of 1963. It's kind of a long excerpt. So in ode to the Shaheed, we would like to bring this beautiful excerpt from his speech forth. Of course, it's really interesting because the speech actually seems like it is something that you gave in the present day. It is so relevant and the realities on the ground, at least inside the United States of America, are practically the same. So, you know, 1965, the brother was, you know, martyred slash assassinated, and you fast forward to 2023, you know, that's like 40 and 20, so almost 60 years, right? 60 years minus two, to do the math. After that much time, the words of this brother are so relevant to the present time that, I mean, it's just mind-boggling. So, I'm sorry, they are so relevant to the present day because the reality of the ground has not changed. Matter of fact, it could be said that it has become worse. Well, anyways, enough of my stuff, and let's go to the quote from Shahid Malcolm X. He says, "Our people in the Negro community are trapped in a vicious cycle of ignorance, poverty, disease, sickness, and death. There seems to be no way out, no way of escape. The wealthy, educated black bourgeoisie, those uppity Negroes who escape, they never reach back and pull the rest of our people out with them. The black masses remain trapped in the slums, aka the ghettos. And because there seems to be no hope, and because there is no escape, we turn to wine, we turn to whiskey, and we turn to reefers, marijuana, and even to the dreadful needle, heroin, morphine, cocaine, opium, all in order to seek an escape. Unemployment and poverty have forced many of our people into a life of crime, but the real criminal is in City Hall downtown, in the State House, and in the White House in Washington, D.C. And so Brother Shahid Malcolm X then continues in this speech of his from 1963, and he says that our people are scientifically maneuvered into a life of poverty by the white man. Because we are forced to live in the poorest sections of the city, we attend inferior schools, and we have inferior teachers, and we get an inferior education. The white power structure downtown makes certain that by the time our people do graduate, we won't be equipped or qualified for anything but the dirtiest and the heaviest and the poorest paying jobs. Jobs that nobody else wants. We are trapped in a vicious cycle of economic, intellectual, social, and political death. Inferior jobs, inferior housing, inferior education, which in turn again leads to inferior jobs. We spend a lifetime in this vicious circle, or in this vicious cycle that's going on in circles, giving birth to children who see no hope or future but to follow our miserable footsteps." His brother is talking about the United States of America, and it's still the same. If you go and look in the inner cities and the slums and the ghettos, it's still the same. Anyway, so the brother continues. He says, "But the white man is misjudging the times, and he is misunderstanding the American so-called Negro, because we're living in a new day. Our people are a new people. That old Uncle Tom type Negro is dead. Our people have no more fear of anyone, no more fear of anything. We are not afraid to go to jail. We are not afraid to give our very life itself. And we are not afraid to take the lives of those who try to take our lives. We believe in a fair exchange. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, a head for a head, and a life for a life. If this is the price of freedom, we won't hesitate to pay the price." End quote. Brother Shahid Malcolm X. 1963. This is 2 years before he was martyred and assassinated. It's powerful, man. Yeah. So, dear brothers and sisters, we are keeping it real because this is keeping it real. Shahid El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz spent his whole life in the pursuit of freedom, the pursuit of independence, the pursuit of liberty. And he spent his life and he pursued in his life the empowerment of the downtrodden, social and political and economic strength for the downtrodden people of the United States of America. He pursued the ideals of social justice, of racial justice, of political and economic justice for a people in the United States of America who were the downtrodden, the oppressed, and the subjugated. He spent his whole life teaching the people and helping the people understand that Islam is a powerful religion that helps and stands up for the rights of the downtrodden and the oppressed, regardless of their race, their religion, their ethnic background, their language, or what place in the world they live in. Islam, as Brother Malcolm X correctly understood, is a religion that helps the downtrodden wherever they are. And wherever the downtrodden and the oppressed may be, you will find Islam trying to help them as much as it can. And so Islam will stand up against the oppressors, whether domestic or international, and it will stand up to all those who usurp and snatch away the God-given rights of the oppressed. And so Shaheed El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz, he fought so hard for the rights of the downtrodden against the arrogant powers, both domestic and international, that the governmental establishment of the United States of America had no other option but to silence the brother. There's only one way to silence somebody, that's to kill him. And that's what they did. But this, dear friends, is just the beginning. Because all of the oppressors and the tyrants and the arrogant powers of the world must know, as Shaheed El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz very eloquently said, we, the downtrodden people of the world, are firmly determined to defend ourselves from any and all aggressors and oppressors, both domestic and international, to secure our God-given freedom, liberty, and independence by whatever means necessary. Hey, we're just keeping it real, wherever you are. Wherever you are, by whatever means necessary. Boogeyman. It's like, whoa, man, yeah, we're law-abiding citizens, so we're gonna buy weapons. Oh, man, you know what was, it's like, man, what's wrong with you guys? You know, why would you call yourself a white supremacist organization? Why would you not say the White Legion? Oh man, did you, so apparently, and this is good, right? So apparently this is like, this is keeping it real part, you know, two bloopers part, keeping it real again, right? So apparently, and I'm sure you guys are all well aware of this, excuse me. So in the Scandinavian country of Sweden, right? They apparently, this guy by the name of Paludan, he went and he burned the Holy Quran, right? And he was like, freedom of speech, you know, and like this, you know, and all this other, you know, sandwich type stuff, and this, he was like, yeah, freedom of speech, and then the Swedish people were like, yes, you know, we believe in freedom of rights, and so you should be able to burn the Quran, and, you know, I don't know what accent that is, but anyways, don't worry, right? So now this is crazy. So as of the day that we recorded this whatever episode, apparently you have some extremists, right, who wanted to burn some scrolls of the Torah, and that was not allowed by the Sweden government. The Swedish government and the Israeli authorities are like, no, religious sanctities, you know, don't burn the Torah, but yeah, you can burn the Quran. Absolute hypocrisy. We need to do a keeping it real on that. How is it possible that you give police and governmental support to an individual who is going to burn the Holy Quran, which is a sacred book to well over 1.5 billion Muslims all across the world, right? That's allowable, but when it comes to, you know, burning the Torah, you know, and the Jewish religious, you know, whatever, then it's like, no, you know, we can't do that. Blatant. That is anti-Semitism in your face. Somebody turn the camera off before this gets out of control. We are Semitic people. When you burn the holy book of Semitic people, you are committing anti-Semitism. Shame on you. While this thing is still on, probably the thing is still on, you know what? They shut down our YouTube channel. Not like we really care, you know what I mean? Like YouTube, like, you know, we don't care. You know, YouTube has no value, but this is media censorship. We're just talking about the truth. What are you guys so scared of? What do you fear? What are you afraid of? We're just, man, it's just keeping it real. Okay, take the mic away from me. All right.
Wherever you are.